It's a Friday, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. It's Ben Fred Fridays exclusively presented by Henderson and Watercutty, and welcome to the studios, Ben, of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com.
It's looking good in here, man. I like took a shower this morning, combed my hair. I'm trying to rise to the occasion here.
Well, you know,
I'm like gonna have to get a makeup thing going on.
What normal
the
sports
TV,
writer?
You TV guys get like the foundation, right? That's the thing.
I don't.
You don't?
No.
All right. Well,
not for many years, and maybe now I do.
I saw Rennie Knott tweets about going to like the makeup store.
Look, in my younger days, I didn't have to. Now, occasionally, there's maybe some makeup applied. But why do we have to talk about that? I don't want to talk about that.
I'm just trying.
Why are you taking shots at TV guys?
No. This is a compliment. I feel honored to be on video so much. I'm not used to this. I had to like find a shirt that wasn't wrinkled and like put away my cargo shorts. Usually, you know, it's like knee-high tube socks, that kind of stuff.
Knee-high tube socks?
You know, the common print writer
uniform. Wait, what do you think, for people that are curious about this, what do writers look like when they show up at the ballpark?
Hey, listen, that's a question for
you,
a critic, not me. I'm going to protect our brethren, all right? We have to be versatile, okay? We got to walk up and down a lot of stairs. We don't just get to sit in the air-conditioned studio and have you know, all of the stats brought to us.
That's how it works.
We don't get all of the things catered to us. We have to be a little more versatile. You know, we wear maybe the tennis shoe as opposed to the the dress shoe.
The tennis shoe as opposed to the dress shoe.
You know, versatility, that's all.
You know, a lot of people, they tune into this particular podcast to listen to our apparel selection.
That's right.
Are others, though, that...
St. Louis Magazine, I think, ranked us, like you and me, like one and two.
Yeah.
Top dressed sports writers.
Well, I get it. I mean, and it makes all the sense in the world. Let's jump into some Cardinals. You
sure.
ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
I love doing these Fridays because we can jump all around, talk about the week that was, maybe the week ahead, the weekend ahead, and also, you know, some of the news that's out there. And one of the biggest things that has gathered the interest of anybody that loves baseball, whether you're a Cardinal fan or not, is that Nolan Arenado, you know, could be traded. And then there's reports that the Cardinals could be interested. Could you imagine Nolan Arenado in St. Louis and what that would look like?
Yes, because I've imagined it. Like we all have, right? I mean, that would be a great addition. He is the best third baseman in baseball. It would be outstanding for the Cardinals to have a player who is so good, not just offensively, but defensively, an all-around star at the game. And there's a reason, right? The Cardinals have, over the years, been linked to this guy. A lot of teams, every team thinks Nolan Arenado's a stud. The Cardinals, like, covet him and have. So this isn't all that shocking that, you know, if Nolan Arenado was going to be moved, that the Cardinals could be connected to this and interested in this. I'm a little hesitant to think that it's like going to happen, or that it's you know, more likely to happen now than it might have been in the past, just for some of the roadblocks that sit in front of it. Also, the Rockies could very well just hold on to Nolan Arenado and see where they are at the trade deadline. And see, hey, if we're winning, let's keep the star player who's the best guy on our team. And if we're going off the rails, then let's trade him. There's no real pressure for them to make this decision now. So we can get in, I'm sure we will, to the potential challenges of it. But in terms of the wow effect, like, no one needs to be sold on how awesome it would be for Nolan Arenado to be in a Cardinals uniform ever.
What are the challenges?
A lot of them. I mean, he's got the – let's start with the fact that the Cardinals have committed both in their words and their contracts, their finances, to Matt Carpenter. I mean, and I'm not leading the parade on the Matt Carpenter bounce back tour, but you remember very well the play the Cardinals made with Dexter Fowler after his bad season. They said up front early, like, he's our guy. We're not going to go anywhere else. We think he's better than what he just showed. It seems to me like the Carpenter thing has been a direct page from the Fowler playbook. In terms of they're betting on it to bounce back, they're committing to him, and he has that assurance that he's going to be the guy. We've also asked the Cardinals if they could see him maybe playing some outfield, and they've pretty much shut the door on that. Now, things can change. There was a time when the Cardinals said Matt Carpenter was a first baseman, and that was it. It was no more bouncing around.
And second base.
Right. So this isn't something that hasn't happened in the past in terms of him moving positions after feeling like he was locked into one. They have given him that extension last season, which their reasoning at the time was they wanted him to end his career in a Cardinals uniform. He'd come off that really hot surge in 18, although it really cooled off in September. And I think he's a really hard contract to move. I think Carpenter's contract, Fowler's contract are both really hard to move, and that's part of the reason, you know, you're dressing it up by saying we not only do they hope he bounces back, they need him to. So that's the big one, I think. The other one would be the cost that it would take to get Arenado in terms of a trade. Not because you're not worried about him being a great player, he's amazing, but because he has that opt out after two more years on that deal. So, you know, I've heard people say, well, they could negotiate him to drop the opt out. And that's great in theory, but why would he do that? I wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. None of us would do that. He worked for that. He leveraged for it. So he could, yeah, maybe tack on another year to the deal and get him to do it. But here's the thing. Nolan Arenado is frustrated in Colorado because he wants to win, like win a World Series. That opt-out gives him the best chance to win a World Series because he'll be able to open up his door to every team and, you know, compete with without restrictions at free agency if he outperforms the deal he has and thinks he can make more money or just have a better shot to win. So the Cardinals are hesitant to give away what it takes to get that kind of player when he has that kind of opt-out. Now, people say, well, what about Paul Goldschmidt? And that's fair. The Cardinals have had success with these kind of deals. Paul Goldschmidt in his career arc was at a much further place down the line than Nolan Arenado was. That's the big thing, is Nolan Arenado's in his prime and should still be in it. Paul Goldschmidt was at his peak, perhaps on the downward slope of it, still an awesome player, and I think he's going to be better this year. But there's a difference when you talk about a 31-year-old and a 28-year-old.
Henderson Watercutty bringing you Ben Fred Fridays, Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Then you think about what's the cost. I'd be really interested to see what that would haul from the Cardinals' perspective, you know, and you're talking Nolan Gorman, you're talking Dylan Carlson immediately, you would have to think if you're the Rockies, and then you've got a plethora of outfielders. Are they interested in any of those guys? What about some of the pitching the Cardinals have? They have good young pitching. You're talking about a player, and I was visiting with one of the most esteemed writers in the country the other night about this. He, in his opinion, he thinks Nolan Arenado is the best defensive third baseman ever. And I said, well, Scott Rolen was pretty darn good. And I never thought I'd say this, but Arenado might be better. And I can't believe I'm saying that because he's that good. So my point is the haul for this guy is going to be incredible. And I don't know what the Cardinals have to offer. Well, I know what they have to offer. I just don't know if they'd go down that road to give them that much to get him, and how much is that going to cost?
Yeah, and then then you factor in the Cardinals have always said if you trade for a guy who has 1 year left on his deal, then you have to make the trade with the you know feeling in your gut that it's still a good trade if he walks after that year. Now they did that with Paul Goldschmidt, and they turned around and signed the extension like that, and they also traded guys who were good players. They also had backfills for them. You know, they had Carson Kelly was blocked by Yachty and Kisner was rising. You had Luke Weaver who was kind of in the mix, but they had a lot of pitchers. So there wasn't one guy you go, oh my God, I can't believe we let him go. If you give up, you know, Dylan Carlson, or if you give up potentially Nolan Gorman, then that could maybe be that guy. Now, is he still worth trading for a superstar in the present now? Perhaps. The report from Jeff Passan was interesting because it said that of all the teams the Rockies have, you know, just bounced ideas off of with and talked with about this potential trade, they really like the Cardinals system, what the Cardinals could offer. And I completely see why. Because if you're Colorado, how do you not like Dakota Hudson, who's a ground ball pitcher and young in that ballpark? How do you not like maybe even a guy like Harrison Bader who could have more power in Colorado.
You got to have a good defensive player.
And he's going to cover a ton of ground in the outfield. Maybe his offense ticks up. So, you know, I can see why the Rockies would be interested in what the Cardinals have to offer. Now, does it mean they would get everything they wanted or they're going to? Probably not. I if you had to put me on the seat today and say, what happens? I think we're having this conversation again at the trade deadline. And I think that would give the Rockies time to see if they can compete, you know, because they're not a bad team. They haven't done anything this offseason, but they're not a terrible team. That would give them time to see where they fit into this, you know, competitive landscape in 2020. It would give the Cardinals time to hopefully get that bounce back from Carpenter that they're hoping for. They could see how that plays out a little bit. But this conversation is fascinating because you zoom out on it, and it would make so much sense because something just doesn't fit with what the Cardinals are doing this offseason. They seem content to let Marcell Ozuna go unless he agrees to a deal that is of their liking, and they're just kind of putting a lot of hope on a handful of talented young guys, but guys who haven't been proven. And the offense has been so unreliable last year. The fans are going, something's not adding up. And this Arenado thing, you can see how that could be the piece.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. How about Ozuna? What are you hearing? Do you think he could find himself back in St. Louis?
I'll still say what I think I've said from the beginning. I hope I've been consistent on this. I feel like I have. If I'm not, call me out, somebody. But I still think the Cardinals are not going to shut that door, but I think someone will before they get there, before Ozuna walks through it. I think there will be a team out there that is more willing to offer Marcell the years and or dollars that St. Louis isn't willing to do. Now, there's a debate about whether his market is decreasing. You know, the Reds signed the outfielder from Japan. The reporters who cover the Reds say they still could be interested in adding another outfielder. It does kind of seem like it's more between the Rangers and the Cardinals now. He made some comments to a journalist in the Dominican about, you know, he hopes the Cardinals step up. He prefers to play for the Cardinals, which I'm not sure how that makes the Rangers feel, if that's really how it goes down. But, you know, all that stuff is leverage. I think if the Cardinals were desperate or determined to bring back Marcell Ozuna, he'd be back.
I think they're
eager to they're just going to let it play out. And if they get him on a pillow contract, if they can get him on a deal that they like, 2 years maybe, I don't see them going beyond that. I don't even know if they would go to two. We'll see if we ever get terms of what exactly they were comfortable of doing. But I think they're comfortable saying, hey, if he's straggling, if he's hanging around, we'll bring him back. But they don't seem willing to go out and make it happen. They want to see if it comes to them.
Don't you agree, though, that you've got to have a bat behind Goldschmidt? Someone's got to be there.
I don't know how you're going to bring back an offense that was the biggest drag on a good team last year. I'm talking about a team that played defense at an elite level, pitched at an elite level, did all the little things right, but had this anchor that it pulled all the way to the NLCS, and then it sank them, you know, significantly, historically. I don't know how you're going to let from that lineup the cleanup hitter, who was not, Marcell Ozuna was better, looked better last season because of the offense he was in, right? I mean, the offense was so unreliable that Marcell Ozuna's production looked like, oh, he's one of the best hitters on the team. He was, but the offense had a lot of guys who were underperforming. That being said, I don't know how you're going to let him walk, fill in with guys who couldn't get playing time last year, and say the offense can be better. You can say, I guess, the offense can be better if you bring him back, and if you say we're going to bank on not everybody except for like two guys having below career average seasons, like there's some probability that says that's probably an okay play to make. But losing your cleanup hitter, adding no offense from the outside, and telling fans that you think the offense can compete and score runs enough to be as good as last year, I don't think that sells, and I don't think it adds up.
You think there's frustration right now with the fan base?
Yeah, and there's always frustration with this fan base because they have high expectations. And they, you know, the Cardinals benefit from that. So, you know, but I think the thing is with the offense. There are a lot of people who were, in some ways, and I would argue against this, put off by last season, when I think it was as good of a season as you can have with an offense that isn't very good. I think that's the best way to put it. You can't have it's not a bad season when you're one of the four teams left in baseball and you got beat by the team that won the World Series. It's not a bad season in baseball when you've got the manager of the year, you have the fewest errors in baseball after having the most the year before, and your bullpen and your rotation are in the top five in baseball's ERA. But what we learned with kind of that frustration about that season is people, like we know this, people like offense. They like runs. They like to see action on the base paths, and the Cardinals' offense was kind of the one thing holding it back. So I do think people thought there would be more attention paid and more kind of a willingness to look into that and try to address it, more than just saying, hey, we hope guys get better. I mean, and I've written this, and I truly believe it. To me, like, we're going to spend all this time talking about Ozuna and Arenado and all these different players. Who can these guys hit better? Can Harrison Bader? The guy that no one's talking about that is a really fascinating character is Jeff Albert.
I was just going to ask you about that.
He's the guy who was hired to not only help this lineup, but to kind of redo the Cardinals' hitting philosophy on the fly at all levels. And the Cardinals say, well, and we hired him for a system-wide approach. It's not exactly fair to have him, his litmus test, be the major league lineup last season. And that, I guess, they can say that for 1 year, but what if it's not better in two? Or what if it drastically is? So he's, to me, a huge piece of this thing.
I agree.
And then you throw in, on top of that, there's questions now about what's going on in Houston. Not that he was, you know, pushing the buttons or banging the trash can, but some of those hitters that his reputation has been boosted by were guys that may or may not have been getting help from something that maybe didn't pass baseball smell test. So that's another aspect to this, is what's real. What is the real Jeff Albert effect? And if they don't see it in 2020, well, I don't know. Let me walk back. They're going to see it in 2020. Is it going to be good or bad or something in between? That's a huge part of this thing that I feel like is getting kind of lost in the debate about who's going to hit where and who's going to protect Goldschmidt. Like, the development of these guys who are going to be back no matter what is probably going to be what makes or break the season more than who's added or not.
What do you think that the commissioner should do with Houston and maybe now the Boston Red Sox?
I think you got to hammer them, because
that's for sure. So what is the hammer, though?
Yeah, I mean, there was like whispers about like lifetime bans at winter meetings. I don't know that it'll go that far. I think it's going to be a really stiff financial fine. I think you have to bring down a level of punishment that says to everyone in the game, when there's that moment in your head of like, is this right or wrong? And your little, you know, angel on your right shoulder is saying, ooh, I would not want to tell anyone I'm doing this, or I would not want baseball to find out I'm doing this. That has to be the stopping point. So that's probably a vague answer, and it's up to Manfred to figure out what that is, but you have to put the fear of God into the people running these teams. And that's the thing too. It has to go high up enough where you can't, like, that's what it was for years and years in college basketball, where the coach could cheat and cheat and cheat. And when the judge and jury showed up, he could say, well, my assistant was doing that. I didn't know.
Right.
And you know what? That assistant would get his career ruined, and the coach would be fine because there was, you know, this deniability. That has to be removed. This has to be treated like culture of compliance. This has to be treated like, you know, it starts at the top. I think you have to punish the top people and instead of just letting it kind of trickle down when it comes to this, because as you know, these guys are paranoid. These guys are looking over their shoulder. And if there are more and more reasons to do this, and the teams that win the World Series are given a slap on the wrist, then why shouldn't every team be finding ways to bend and break the rules? And the thing about the Red Sox, this isn't going to get as much attention because Houston was the first one. The Red Sox, there's a case there. They should be punished more severely because they were told.
With the Apple
in
Watches.
17.
Right.
Rob Manfred said, look, I don't know what all is going on here, but this doesn't look right. And if I catch you guys doing something that doesn't look right again, then I'm coming down harder. Well, here it is. So, you know, I think there are probably a lot of teams that are going, okay, let's rethink some of the things we're doing, you know, because maybe it's not as grandiose as what the Astros and Red Sox are doing, but I'm telling you, these players know what people are doing. These teams know what people are doing. Guys change teams. So this is something that I think we're going to see more and more of these conversations. But if you're as told as the Red Sox, like, you were told, you were put on notice, and you still did it. So if they're not punished in a way that tells everybody he's serious about this, then everybody's going to keep doing it, and it's just going to become this paranoid Patriots level of, you know, oh my God, where can we go? What can we do? You know, what are they doing? Every loss is tainted by this idea of they cheated. You got to find a way to try to get rid of that as soon as you can.
Let's do some quick hitters here. We got a few more minutes. I still get a lot of people asking about MLS for the Lou and where they're at. Where's the governor with the tax situation?
Right now, he's just really working on that taxpayer-paid valet at the Capitol, because that's important, right? Okay, so the soccer project, not important, but getting your car parked as a politician in Jeff City, that's important. So that's the update on that.
How about MLS for the Lou? Boy, you're rough today.
I'm just that when I saw that headline, I about fell out of my chair.
Yeah.
And like, I look, it's a tiny fraction of the cost of we're talking apples and oranges to some degree, but everyone who cheered the governor for, you know, no money for sports and didn't get mad about the governor creating, you know, valet parking for politicians, that shows that people aren't really reading into the project of what's trying to go on here in St. Louis. The latest, I mean, we're still kind of waiting on the ownership group to say what's next here, what comes after this setback with the state. I think we're going, I know we'll have team name and colors and that stuff, I think, by April. But until then, you know, I don't know that there's going to be all that much. How they decide to handle this thing with the state pushing back on the funding is going to be interesting. And I think we'll hopefully have some more insight into that here in the near future. I know people are eager and, you know, to some degree, this what next feeling, I think, is something that the group said, you know, we're not going to rush a response, because it's okay for people to realize, like, this is going to take cooperation by other people. This isn't just all on us. So maybe some of that wondering has made people think about, you know, maybe there's still a chance this isn't completely done. And we'll see what the next step is.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. The Blues playing well. Kyrou's in and out, you know, sometimes.
Play him.
I'm at the same point, and I understand how Chief wants his players to be, at least from the outside looking in.
Right.
Well, physical, defensive minded, that kind of thing. And Kyrou is a skilled, quick player. But man, I want to see that kid play.
Everybody does, and I think Berube does too. And it's worth saying this: like, questioning Craig Berube's lineup decisions right now is
right.
Like.
Can't do that.
He's trying to like argue like 1 + 1 = 2.
Right.
He's got the touch. I joke with Bob Ramsey because he calls him the lineup god. And like really, like we're picking at small things here, but they did sit him down in the road trip, and Berube has said more about that lately. He said, "Look, we needed him to be, you know, more sound with the puck, some sloppy, you know, kind of weak turnovers, and we need him to be more sound defensively. I don't think they expect him to be, you know, hard hitting Sammy Blais out there." But no one gets a free pass under Berube for not doing the defensive, fundamentally sound things. So if he's going to let those waver, Kyrou, then he's not going to like where he is, which is going to be in the press box. You like the response that he had in against San Jose. They put him back in the lineup. He played like 14 and a half minutes, which is, I think, the second most playing time he's got this season, except for his like debut this season, his first game. So that's really encouraging. And he had the goal that was wiped off because of one of the worst rules in professional sports, like the, oh, you know, let's check for offsides, and they got him. So it would have been his third goal of the season. It was amazing, a great shot, nice chemistry there with Shin. But I think what Berube said about it, other than the goal, was encouraging for folks who want to see Kyrou play. He said, I thought he was strong, and not just about the goal. And he thought he had a strong game. He was more sound. So nothing will get a guy kind of paying attention to what his coach wants him to pay attention to, like watching from the press box. And hopefully that's the last time that it has to happen, because he's too talented to sit now.
When I watch local college basketball, I don't know who the Illini are. I don't know who
question.
Mizzou is.
Yeah.
I think I got a pretty good idea of who SLU is. They're going to get a test tomorrow. They go on the road against Richmond. They've got the big game coming up on a Friday night at 6 against Dayton. That'll be huge. The blizzard is what they're calling it. It'll be a whiteout. The place will be packed, going nuts. I think it's almost a must-win for SLU. They got to get a signature win. But it's really hard to figure out the local college scene right now. But of those three teams, and I'm not sure any of them make the NCAA tournament, but I got to give SLU the edge, at least at this point.
Yeah, and one thing to hit on there is it seems like the A-10 unfortunately gave up some of its goodwill toward the selection committee during the non-conference. I thought they would get three teams in, four if maybe a stunner won the tournament. I don't think it's going to be that high.
You don't think three, huh?
No. Talking to Ken Pomeroy, who's like, you know, knows everything about college basketball, he thinks they're talking about two, maybe three, if somebody stuns somebody at the A-10 tournament. So that makes things harder for SLU. They gave up that was a bad loss at Duquesne. Like, they shouldn't have lost that game. They didn't look good. I mean, they should have lost that game based on how they play, but they're a better team than they showed there. They need something to erase that one. That's really their only bad loss.
Yeah. I mean, the Seton Hall loss, you can understand it.
Yeah, Seton Hall's a great team.
Auburn, now, you had a chance to win if you had free throws.
And Auburn, look where Auburn is right now. So that they need something to overcome that, which could be Dayton. I mean, they get Dayton twice. They get VCU once. You got to win more of those games than you lose. There's three. You win two of them, you're feeling pretty good. If you don't let the bottom drop out against somebody you should beat, that's kind of where things stand. Illinois had a huge win against Wisconsin on the road. They're a bizarre team.
They really are.
I wrote today, I think the team that maybe perhaps best fits college basketball right now is Illinois, because it's just all over the place. You cannot predict it. Illinois can lose to Missouri and then go and beat Wisconsin on the road, hadn't won against them in 15 games. So the talent is there, and DeSumo is a great player. He took over that game in Wisconsin. If they can have him be, you know, ascending, you know, taking the next step forward, being that killer when the game's on the line, then they can make up for a lot of lost ground in this conference. It's a tough league.
I can't figure out Mizzou.
Well, I think we were starting to figure out Mizzou. The talent, the ceiling is not very high. And now Jeremiah Tillman's hurt, and he was a head case before that, so it's not like their season depended on that. But that's one of the talented options. They're playing a ton of guys. They can't really figure out who to rely on. I think it's going to be a game-by-game thing. Mark Smith has to score better for this team to win. He's scoring against not good teams and not scoring against good teams. Drew Smith has to be smarter. Can't get terrible fifth foul when his team needs him on the floor. They have depth, and they can bring guys off the bench, but they don't have a guy that they can say, game's on the line, who's our Io DeSumo? They don't have that guy. It was supposed to be Tillman, and he's wrestled with foul problems, and now he's hurt. It was supposed to be Mark Smith, and he's just doesn't look capable of being that guy at the SEC level right now. It's putting a lot of pressure on Drew Smith to facilitate, to score, to do everything. Somebody's going to have to emerge, whether it's Xavier Pinson or Trey Jackson, who's played a lot, played and scored well, but probably should have played more against Tennessee. But, you know, Tennessee is not a good team right now. And Missouri has really put itself in a tough spot when it comes to tournament projections based off of these games. Huge game against Florida on Saturday in Columbia. That's one of those ones that, you know, if you lose your first three to start conference play, then you're in a tough spot.
Eli Drinkwitz, he did have a fairly big signing the other day, but what are your impressions and what you've heard about him recruiting, just in general, you know, about a month on the job? What are you hearing?
All good signs, all good things. You know, everybody's excited by his energy. I think, you know, there's a lot of appreciation for his hustle in terms of getting out, meeting folks, talking to recruits. His one thing I hear about him, and this is worth mentioning, and because I think maybe older people tend to overlook it, his activity and engagement and accessibility and enthusiasm on social media is something that I think is helping him. And people say, well, what is that? That doesn't win you games. Okay, and it doesn't. But you know what it does? It gets your name, your brand, your face in front of 18, 17, 16, 15-year-olds.
You have to be on it.
Go out to a mall or a movie or wherever you see young people and look at what they're doing.
They're on their phones.
Most of us are as adults. That's where he is. He's engaged there. He's saying, hey, did you see what Drinkwitz tweeted? Hey, Carl Reed, who's the great coach at Lutheran, did you see what he tweeted? He's boys with Drinkwitz. Okay, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, he's getting people talking, and that's half the battle, man. And you can't win a game until you coach one. But you can do a lot of things to move the needle. I think he's trying to do that.
Well, we have a moment, and we'll wrap it up with this, the Baseball Writers Dinner. I know you want to promote that too.
Yeah, just if people are interested, if you haven't been, I would encourage you to make this the year you come check it out, and I think you'll come back. It funds scholarships for journalists, and it's money spent with a good cause. You can grab a ticket to. It's great dinner involved, included. We're going to have Ted Simmons. We're going to have Bill James. We're going to Jack Flaherty's going to be there. Colton Wong with his Gold Glove. Mike Schilt with his Manager of the Year award. It's going to be a good time, a good evening. If you're interested, please check it out. StLouisBBWAA.com, or you can go through MetroTix and get your tickets there.
Always fun, my man. We'll see you next Friday. Thanks.
Sounds good, man. Nice digs.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.